Podcasting 2.0 for April 2nd, 2021, episode 31, We're Cooking with Gas. If you know how to light the stove, that is. You know, no electricity gets harder, right? Hey everybody, it's Friday once again. Time for the board meeting of Podcasting 2.0. Everything that's going on at podcastindex.org. You are welcome. Come on in. We got your seat ready. We got a lot to talk about today, and we have another assessor of the board, so it's always good to have a guest on. I'm Adam Curry here in Austin, Texas, and now in Alabama, the man all the ladies want to rebalance their channels with, my friend on the other end, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Dave Jones!
No, that's if that's in the cards, if it's about money, that's not going to happen. Yeah. If that's the ladies thing, that's not going to happen.
Come on, I mean, Dave. The ladies love them some Dev from the South.
Do you think we're going to win an Ambi?
An Ambi?
Yeah.
No. I can quite confidently say you that there is 0.1% chance of us ever winning an award. At no, all.
But it's just how you define your categories. If you slip your category, like if you reduce your category footprint down as low as possible to the smallest niche, you could win. That's how you win. You lower the bar until you achieve success.
I'm thinking our
category is most listeners for a podcast that does not exist in iTunes.
Yeah. That is kind of weird the way that's worked out. Well, you know, with award shows, the way to do it is you create an award show and then give yourself all the awards. This is the, what's that big industry award they're always handing out that the airlines always have and the car companies?
Oh, the J.D. Power.
The J.D. Yeah. Power Awards. Yeah, you pay and you get it. What kind of statue do you want? You want a nice trophy or do you want just the Lucite one? Yeah, you can pay more and then that's how you do it. It's like the iHeartRadio. You got all these awards. But the Ambies, that's the Podcast Academy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. I'm just thinking that category specifically has got to be just like us and like, I don't know, some porn feeds or something.
We can't be a part of the Ambies because we're not diverse enough.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. There's two white guys. You know, you don't get Ambies for that stuff, man. That's not how it works.
There's no other podcast with that demographic, by the way. white guys. That's like 90% of podcasts.
Yeah, really? No, that's not true. There's a lot of white girls doing podcasting too.
You know who has a diverse podcast is Anita Posh.
Oh, the what's her Bitcoin podcast called again? It's I subscribe to it, so I should know.
Bitcoin and Co.
Yes,
Bitcoin and Company.
I like. Yeah. You know, she has a very oddly appealing presentation style, you know, with the accent and everything. There's something about mm-hmm. it that I just kind of like.
Yeah. And she fit, you know, you got all these like interview podcasts that have just sort of the same people making the same rounds.
Mm-hmm.
And she digs up people that are like, I've never heard of half the people that she interviews. People that are like from, West Africa doing Bitcoin stuff. I mean, like, she really digs up some cool people.
I think it's Anita Posh Show is what it's called. At least that's what I'm subscribed to.
I think she has two.
Oh, okay.
Two shows, if I'm not right.
Oh, all right. Well, I got to look at that.
Well, this just falls into the bucket of Dave says things that are absolutely wrong with extreme confidence.
Fact check false.
Yeah. Like, you know, okay, so errata, a piece of errata here.
Yes.
I said that Audible does not support chapter titles. That is wrong. They do.
Okay. Well,
but if you say it forcefully enough, it's true, right?
Yes. No, just keep repeating it. That'll work.
Yeah. Okay.
All of you cheapskates out there, immediately go to your value sliders, crank them up. Come on. I see you on Breeze. And get us past 10 sats a minute. You can crank that up. You might as well boost if you feel like it. Ah, feels so good to be receiving all those little sats dripping in every single day. 24/7 now, Dave. It doesn't stop.
How about PodFriend?
Okay. So this was what I've been waiting for. PodFriend released today, including value for value streaming. And it's, I think Martin did the right thing. He said, let me just get something out. So you can't change the boost or the sats per minute yet. And I'm missing an overview of what's been spent. But Holy crap. Best. If there was an AMBI for best onboarding, that would be it. That would be it. I mean, yeah, I was up and running in 25 seconds. That's how fast. And I already have the app. It appeared all of a sudden. Every podcast that is value block enabled has a little button right there. It surfaced just like the funding tag. It was beautiful.
I'm not sure I've ever been so happy about giving money to someone.
I know. Oh my God, it's working. I said to Tina this morning. She's like, well, where's my update? I said, oh, it's not on iOS yet. She's discriminated against again.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
No, I like that. I think it was delightful. That's the best word that I can use to describe for it. I mean, just going through the wizard, like step by step, it's like, here's what's going to happen. Here's what you're about to do. You're about to give money away.
It's total pod friend, friendly language.
It is. And I think that's the, I like how you can just enable it and disable it. It's like you get halfway through and you're like, I'm not sure what this is. And you're just like, okay, I'm out. I turn it off.
Done. Exactly. Yeah. And I like that onboarding without the whole Bitcoin piece, just with the Lightning piece, which, mm-hmm. You can send it from Cash App. How you put Stripe in there? Did he mean to say Strike?
I think so.
I think so too. I think he meant Strike instead of Stripe. Yeah. And I know that that was the funniest thing this past week. Jack Mahler's from the Strike app all of a sudden. And by the way, this is how it works. And this is what I've always said. It's always the content. It's always the marketing comes from the podcast listeners and podcasters themselves. And one of our 2.0 value podcasters who was set up over there on satoshistreams.com, which also needs to be talked about. Holy crap. They figured out the statistics part. She posted, I think she, I don't know who it was, but posted, wow, I've already made more money in value for value streaming payments than I did with advertising. This is the future. And then Jack Mahler's from Strike App saw that, who we talked to months ago. And he said, wow, this is great. Does anyone know where there's a spec? How do I implement this? Yeah. And I went, hey, Jack, hey. And I posted a link to the GitHub. And now you followed up with him?
Yeah, I sent an email earlier. I just sent an email. It was basically a reply to the reply that we had already had in our thread with him.
Right.
And I just said, here's, by the way, here are the API calls you need to do this. It's just like these three or four calls. And, here you go. If you got any more questions, holler.
But even if he would just, it's a perfect on-ramp for getting sats into any of these wallets. I mean, it's really the way to go instead of necessarily buying Bitcoin outright. It's just an interesting process. It's really interesting. And
I won't claim to know a ton about Strike other than just what I've heard Jack describe. And so I think that is going to be the way that Lightning enters the
ecosystem. Sort of I agree.
Because people will get aggravated because it doesn't show you your sats balance.
Yeah.
But I think that's on purpose, because Strike is not a currency exchange. Like, they're not a conversion system. They use Lightning as just a transport mechanism. Their real business is to be able to send fiat currency from one place to another. And so what happens when you buy Strike, when you buy some currency on Strike and send it to another Strike user, they convert that fiat into Lightning, send it to the other country, convert it back into the local fiat currency at the current exchange rate, and then credit the other Strike user. That's why it's not available globally.
Right.
And so basically they're just doing they're doing transport over the Lightning network. And the side benefit that you get from that is, because under the covers it's Lightning, you can also pay Lightning invoices with it.
Yes.
But that's why they don't show you a sats balance, is because it's not a Bitcoin exchange. It's a, It's Venmo.
Yes. It's Venmo. And in fact, you don't even buy currency with them. You hook it up to your debit card or your bank account the same way you do Venmo, which, by the way, has a lot of downside from the security, freedom, et cetera. But that doesn't matter to me. And we do need to talk about these things. So when you either transfer, it feels like you're transferring it from your debit card or from your bank. And it doesn't really matter how it gets to the other end. But in this case, it also just works as a straight up mechanism. It's like, oh, I just want to top up my podcast wallet. And my God, the invoice, I mean, that is the piece that I agree with you, blew me away with Podfriend. It's like, you want to enable it? Yes, I want to enable it. Boom. Hold on a second. And here's how you do it. And here's your invoice. And I just flipped over to, what app did I use? I used Sphinx app. And it popped right up and said, oh, I'm ready to send 20,000 sats. Good to go. Boom, done. And then I switched back to Podfriend and I got a spew of confetti.
Yeah. I like that.
Like, oh, confetti splooge. I must have received it. And for some reason, it just feels tight, man. You can't even explain that. It feels tight how it works. And then it just does it. And it does it the way you expect it. You know, it's like, okay, I boosted, it's gone. I can see that it's gone, done. That's fine. Now we just need to have, I want to know how much value I transferred to each podcast. As I said, that's, I think that's an important loop closer.
Yeah, the sliders need to be there too.
And the variables are non-changeable at the moment. So really the boost amount is too high and the per minute rate is too low. Yeah, I'm a 500 sat booster. And I'm 100 sat a minute guy. That's kind of my comfort zone. So I know I'm going to be boosting most podcasts at least four times. So there's a 2,000.
I wonder what I am. Let's see. What
kind of guy are you actually, Dave Jones?
I'm a 133 boost.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. And yes, I'm a 333 on Sphinx. And here's the thing with the Breeze app. You can't do the numerology. This is and I told Roy, I said, oh man, this two pieces missing. One, you can't baller against everybody because no one knows that you did that, which is problem one. Like in Sphinx, everyone sees what you're doing. And you can't do a custom amount. That's what people want. They want to be recognizable. That's an early code indicator that people really want to use. Like, oh, when I see 133 come through, I know that's from Dave.
It's like it's the other part of your identity. I'm 100. I'm 100 sat on Breeze and a 50 sat. I'm 100 sat boost and a 50 sat per minute on Breeze.
Yeah,
so I'm a cheap loser is what I am.
So about identity, and this is just something I wanted to throw out there. Mo is kind of my canary in the coal mine. He's the guy that told me about Clubhouse months before it became popular. And he has a very specific set of ideas from his experience as a YouTuber, what the audience is looking for. And it's not video, by the way. It's really the chat. People want to leave comments, want to chat. The idea of the super chat, which, you know, is a paid comment, all of that stuff. So
that's where Twitch like rose up because I think they did that.
Exactly.
Before YouTube
exactly.
Did.
Yeah. Exactly. So I got him on the Sphinx app. He's seeing sats coming in. And he's delighted. But he really thought about it. And he said, you know, it was part of what Max Kaiser said. He said, here's what really hit me. He says, my identity, who I am as a broadcaster, regardless of whether it's, you know, how it's done. He says, it's really my feed, isn't it? Because my feed is my life. And it contains my payment information. And shouldn't I just have, and this is why I wanted to throw it out there. It says, shouldn't I just have a feed that anyone can get through a QR code? And depending on what you're doing, so if it's a podcast app, it sucks in only the podcast. If it's a blog or some other type of, we don't have them anymore, but something that could just read an RSS feed. It would only take those pieces. Pictures would show up perhaps in a Mastodon. What's that called? Not called Pixel, but there's a kind of like an Instagram knockoff on Mastodon.
But that does the embedding thing.
Yeah. And so, but it's interesting because that to me was a throwback to almost 20 years ago. That's exactly what we were talking about. Everybody will have their feed and you own your feed, which you do if you're not an anchor. You own your feed and that's your identity and that's really the value. And, you know, and the whole idea of flashing a QR code, something was there that really struck me at a deep level that we're not, that we've forgotten to think about, I guess. Does that make any sense?
Specifically about the QR code and being able to like that.
No, just
that being your,
well, just your feed being your entire identity and it be, it go beyond podcasting.
Yeah. Now I can see that. Cause I think we had that feeling back with the Freedom Controller because that's why we put those QR codes on all the articles.
Yes, you're right. You're right.
Because there's some kind of thing that says this is like, I don't know. I know what you're saying. It's something about, I think the QR code has this feeling where it's like an anchor to something that's not going to ever go away. Like it feels like it's a permanent sort of declaration of this entity. It's almost like a, like an NFT type experience. And I know you're not specifically talking about just the QR code, but I mean, like I think it expresses that the feeling of what's behind it, which is rather this one sort of blob of data.
With the QR code, you mean? Know,
Are you okay?
Yeah. No, I lost you for a second. You mean that the QR code represents that?
Yeah. Like, well, it's what it represents. It represents this location or this identity, and it could be the feed or whatever it is. But then the QR code is just sort of like this visual representation of this thing,
right?
That exists somewhere else. It's like a bundle of information about.
Yeah. It's like a fiber optic nerve ending there. It's like, if I just connect to that, then I'm going to connect to this pipe somehow, this blob of stuff. Yeah. I like it.
Maybe we should take advantage of that more and try to make that more a part of things because it would be, see, that's what, you know, RSS feeds or podcast feeds are missing too, is this easy sort of scannable thing that, and Lightning has that. You know, Lightning QR codes are all over the place.
Yep.
But there's no universal sort of ID system that's like scannable or easy to, you know, what you end up with is these podcast landing pages with like 15 badge buttons on them that says, oh, do you want to listen in Stitcher? Do you want to listen in Overcast? Yeah. Do you want to listen in this? And you got to pick which one you want. So and they're never complete.
Yeah. So even that maybe is just a thought, you know, Tina listens to other stuff that I do, but it's on Podfriend. And if I say, oh, what do you listen to? And she says, oh, it's, I don't know, Victor Davis Hanson podcast. I should be able to just take my phone and flash a QR code from her phone. I'm subscribed and I'm set up, you know, I should be just good to go. And it's a simple thing. I liked how Mo connected the feed to the identity and to the QR code. And there's something there to explore. But really, I think we're selling ourselves short by not bringing in our guest, because I think he can talk about this too. Shall we bring him in? Shall we bring our assessor of the board in?
Oh, I think we absolutely need an auditor in this room, because we're going to go off the rails
here. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the boardroom. The man who I don't know all that much about, although I listen to him at least for an hour every single week. He is a podcaster. He is a broadcaster. He's a radio mogul. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Sam Sethi, also known as Smokin' Sam Sethi.
Hello. Hey, Sam. Thank you very much for that intro.
Yeah, no, that was the shittiest intro I've ever done. I'm sorry. I really didn't know what to say. I mean, I know you do a lot, and I didn't want to peg you to one thing because I really know you from Podland. That's my, you know, that's kind of my weekend go-to podcast.
Well, thank you for listening.
That's well, amazing. I've got a question right off the bat for you though, Sam.
Yes.
So a friend of mine sent me this link. It says Trinity College in Perth bans mullet haircuts, labeling them unacceptable. And then, so I'm like, what the heck? Why is mullet a thing in Australia? And then I find this Wall Street Journal article that says the mullet makes a comeback and divides Australia. Evidently, this is a humongous thing in Australia about the return of the mullet. And I'm just wondering, you know, I've never actually seen James Cridlin in real life.
Does he have a mullet?
All we get is the business side of James. There may be a party in the back. Do we know that that's not the case?
Well, I think as part of his Australian citizenship, he's had to grow a mullet. I think that's what's happened. And that's why you don't see him. He's in the middle of changing.
I love it.
I'm going to quote you, Sam.
Thank you.
About 3 weeks ago on Pod News, you said, I'm going to lose my podcast virginity and go on Adam and Dave's show.
Yeah, really? I heard that. I didn't know if I was supposed to be insulted or complimented. I felt torn.
We haven't even had drinks yet, Sam. I mean, that's a little presumptuous.
Well, I think we should have drinks and then I'll lose it for you.
Okay.
So Sam, you are, I'd like to know a little bit about your background because, first of all, as I said, Podland is really a go-to for me. I enjoy it very, very much. And I like the dynamic between, you and James, you know, because of course, you know, we know he's a pommy, obviously. That's why he's living there. I hear you've got these interesting projects you're working on. So clearly a podcaster. And you live in the, you live full time in the UK? That's,
A citizen of the UK since birth. So yeah, no, love it here.
Okay. What is your background? How did you come into podcasting, which I'm quite confident comes through radio broadcasting? Just give us a little background on you so we can get a handle on it.
Yeah, I mean, I was a radio broadcaster, I'm a radio broadcaster, love the medium, and podcasting really took a comeback. I mean, you know, I was around when you first started it out and didn't get into it that first time round, really. And then podcasting made its comeback. And I thought, you know, I really want to do a podcast. Now, over in the UK here, we didn't really have that many podcasters at the beginning doing anything interesting. They're all sort of amateur hour. And one of the things that I wanted to do was interview entrepreneurs and people in business who were setting up cool startups. And so that's my background. Like that was the seed of the idea that I wanted to do. So I've done over 150 of those. And I love doing them because each one's a great story. So that's where I started. And then I've mixed basically radio and podcasting because the two are an interchangeable medium, really.
But is Sam Talks Technology, is that still a live show? Because it doesn't look like it's had an episode in a while.
Yeah, it hasn't in a while. The reason is I've got 24 in the can, Dave.
Wow.
Editing is the time. Now, stupidly, I came to James and said, look, do you want to do a podcast about podcasting, which seemed very meta, but I thought there was a space for it. And so we started Podland only back in November. And at the same time, just because I didn't think I was busy enough, I decided to start a radio station as well. So combine the two together, and Sam Talks Technology has had to take a small hiatus, but it will be back.
So I've been... I come from the radio days. I was growing up in the Netherlands. I'm not sure how old you are, but you know, in the 70s, 80s, and in the 70s and all the way to most of the 80s. So I was always very intrigued by British broadcasters. Of course, for me, it started with Caroline and Mi Amigo, North Sea, Veronica, you name it, all the ships, the pirate ships. We know about the BBC. BBC has gone through a number of interesting changes with DAB, direct audio broadcast, the pirates, lots of pirate stations in the cities in the UK. And then of course the, commercialized. And I think that was also mainly, I'm not familiar, not exactly sure, mainly DAB is a lot, you know, we had Virgin Radio come in and it's just been a very interesting landscape. And you still have, very much like other countries, you have this, you know, this BBC entity, which just kind of sits there and I don't even know how important they are anymore. So where are you on that spectrum? Were you kind of in that first commercial wave with Virgin Radio and that stuff? Or do you come from before that?
Oh, I come before that. I'm 54, Adam. So
we're the same age. Oh, so you know my friend Pat Sharp, probably.
Oh, yes. Actually, I do an event with Pat.
Tell him I said, hey.
I will do. Yeah, we do have an 80s Rock the Moor event. So we've got,
yeah. Talk about mullet. He got rid of his. Pat Sharp used to have a massive mullet. He got rid of that, I think.
He did, yeah. He was the original mullet carrier. And no, Pat's doing all right. He's doing all right.
Yeah, Gary Davis with the moving bit in the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know all
Ooh,
these guys.
Gary Davis on the radio.
That's right, everybody. Yeah. So that's the kind of yahoos I used to hang out with. And now you've gone back to it. I'm just going to be presumptuous and say you've done a DAB radio station.
I have, yes. We're launching a DAB. We literally just launched a month ago. And so we're just building out the schedule, as you know what it's like, and getting the presenters trained up. And then we'll turn on the DAB in about a month when we think we've got everyone ready and everything lined up.
Now, I find
worth doing before.
I think this is really interesting because I think we're coming full circle to it. And I want to know, and the DAB is not known in the United States. It's not really
digital. That's the digital thing, right?
Yeah. It's digital broadcast. The Netherlands actually has one or two of their government stations only on DAB. Most of the car manufacturers have some version of it now built in. So that is a lot more prevalent. But I feel, and especially since we've been looking at the alternate enclosure in the namespace for a live stream, I have this feeling that the small, and I'd love to know the format of the station, but mm-hmm. the localized DAB broadcasters will be able to benefit from taking their same stream and just blasting it out, you know, on the internet, whether it goes through a podcasting 2.0 app or just to tune in or whatever it is. It feels, and it's funny because I was just being interviewed about that. Is radio dead? I said, no, the local community station, which needs to be mm-hmm. supported as such, I think is really necessary. So tell me about the format and if that's what you're looking at, or are you going broader?
No, we're going hyper-local because
nice.
What we have in the UK is, yeah, you have the BBC, so they're the massive footprint over the whole of the country. Then you have the commercial radio stations. There's two big groups, Global and Bauer. And what they've done, sadly, is they've bought up all the local radio stations and then they've merged them into like a national
network
radio station. So they've sacked all the local radio station presenters and created a network, commercial network, to challenge the BBC on a nationwide state. So everybody's going, well, hang on, I want my local news about stuff down the road. I don't want it about stuff 300 miles away that doesn't relate to me. So hyperlocal is where I think I want to go, and hyperlocal, I think, is what people want as well.
And do you see a merging coming? Because you started this, you're not crazy. Maybe you are, but you don't start radio is going to work the way it always has. What's the model that you have for this? Is this a build it, they'll come, we'll see? I mean, what's the thought there?
No, I'm a firm believer that music is now a commodity, unfortunately, because, whether it's Spotify, Amazon or Apple, you can get music anytime you want. And kids under 25 don't listen to radio. They've got stuff that just isn't even broadcastable on radio. So they're not even tuning in. Radio 1's losing, the big mainstream young kids radio station is losing hand over fist listeners. What people want is intelligent conversation, and they want it to be about where they live and mixed in with a couple of nostalgic tracks. And that's really what we're focused on. Now, taking that, you can podcast those as well, because what we have learned with podcasting is, people aren't always ready to listen live, so on demand is where we're going. But so it's a chat-based radio station with a little bit of music, but it is designed to be podcastable. And you might like this part, Adam and Dave. We're using Wooshka down in Australia as the platform that takes the live stream from the Icecast and puts it straight into a podcast, removes all the music through tagging, and puts it straight out onto Apple, Spotify, and Google.
Wow.
Now, do they chop that up? I mean, how's it segments? How's that work?
No, you configure it. So what happens is you take the straight Icecast live stream, so they're recording everything, but you then tell them what the schedule looks like of your shows. So you say 10 till 12, give it a name, then you configure it like you would a podcast. So it's like an RSS feed going straight in, and you're telling it that 10 till 12 is my feed. That's the name of this podcast. And if there's music in it, what you can do is replace that because it's using dynamic content insertion. So it's taking out the music and replacing that with any ad I want to put in or any other information. And then it pushes it straight out as a podcast would do on any podcast host. So yeah, taking all the hard work out of running a radio station.
Maddening in that process is the fact that you probably cannot even get a license to leave the music in, because if it were possible, I'd be doing it. what does that look like on the performing rights organization there in the UK? How are they looking at streaming? Is it similar to the US where it's, or they geolocate it, like you can pay a license for UK only? I mean, what's the
Yeah, we've structure? Got two licensing bodies, just to make the matter more complex: PPL, the performing performance license, and PRS, which Ofcom run. So if you've got a DAB or an FM license, you've got to get one from Ofcom to actually broadcast live.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got to get a PPL license to actually play music. So you can have a non-music DAB station, and that's one license. But the minute you add music to that station, you have to have the second license.
And is that calculated on usage, or is it a flat fee, or is it based on revenue?
It's flat fee up to $5,000, and then after that, it's revenue based. So it's a percentage of revenue, and
which you have to negotiate with them, I guess, independently.
Yeah, and it's maddening because then you've
also got to pay them. But the mafia, man, it's the fucking mob. It's the mob.
Yeah. But on top of that, you've also got to pay for your transmitter license as well. So there's the third license, and that's the really big one as well. So you pay Ofcom, PPL, and the transmitter company.
Oh, well. And isn't Defra want a payment just for the hell of it?
I'm sure that somebody wants a brown paper bag somewhere. I know that.
Defra is like, that was my first encounter. Like, you got pets, you got a garden, do you fart sometimes? Defra will come visit you. What is that, Department of... What does it stand for?
It used to be the Department for Agriculture and something else. God knows now.
Agriculture, furry things and whatever. Yeah.
Oh education, man. Education.
Oh, those anything guys are Nazis.
Yeah. Every other department that didn't have a thing to do went into that department.
Right. It's like, we need some a-holes to collect some money. Eh, give it to Defra. Yeah. Oh, they'll take care of it for
exactly.
You.
Exactly.
Wow, that's interesting. I really believe in this, Sam. I really believe that. And the reason why is I had this experience when our electricity went out in Austin, Texas, which was quite uncommon. It was shocking for everybody. We were without electricity for 50 hours, which was, and we were lucky. And our pipes did not break because I got a wife who grew up in Chicago in Indiana, so she knows how to drip faucets and took care of that. But the worst part is, now I'm a ham radio operator. I'm fully licensed. I can do all kinds of crazy shit. That was disappointment number one. Because I got on the frequencies and like, all right, everybody, let's organize. And it's like, oh, mic check. I'm like, okay, that's no good. We're not going to do the ham guys. Then I tune in to NPR, our local KUT NPR radio station. I got Terry Gross, Fresh Air, our guest today. I'm like, okay, we're dying here, people. And the only station was KLBJ, which has been around for a long time. It's, you know, it's a very, very, has a lot of history. Then it's like the Todd and Jimbo in the morning show, who were doing a great job. You know, they had listeners calling in, giving their experiences, local reports, and they're just a bunch of morning show, everybody, you know, one of those guys.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy crap. It's like a town, like a city like Austin, we have, you know, you could have a million person reach here easily. We need this. And it needs to be delivered in, you know, it would be great to get it digitally. But even just over the air, although that is not, I don't think it's financially feasible. So I think that this will, just like people discovered podcasting because of the nature of Serial, and we brought back the cliffhanger in an age of binge watching. Like, what? I can't listen. I can't get episode 5 now. I need it now. I'm hooked. I had 1, 2, 3, 4 right after each other. I need 5. I can't get 5. You got to wait a whole week. You know, so
they can't do that.
That's what brought people in. And similarly, in the U.S., it's Westwood One and Premier Radio Networks, and they've bought up all the stations, and they're doing the same thing, except they'll put Elvis Duran morning show, who's in New York, they'll put him on in 18 markets. You know, it's completely not local. It sounds like shit.
Yeah, and that's the same in the U.K. They're just taking one London-based presenting co-host and just whacking them straight across the whole of the UK. And people are just going, well, that doesn't refer to me. That doesn't even, you know, reference anything I need to do. So they're turning off to it.
Well, that's you were telling me before the before we were talking before the show that the market that you're aiming for was like just this one area that had just no radio footprint at all.
Yeah, it's called Berkshire, which is where the Queen lives. Royal it's Berkshire.
Berkshire, really? Oh, so we'll go to Fortnum and Mason's, and then with our picnic basket off to Berkshire.
It's the Queen's English here. Yeah, it's and Berkshire basically has about 5 million people as a footprint if you add a few of the other local counties to it, and there is no commercial radio station there. So that was my entrepreneurial scratch. I wanted to itch. Basically, it was like, well, there must be a reason. Look, there is a need. I know there's a need. People want local radio information about events, concerts, stuff that's happening, but no one's providing it apart from the BBC. And so, yeah, that's where I started it about 6 months ago as an idea. Well,
it's the same. It just hearing y'all talk, it just reminds me so much of what Facebook and Google did to the local news market. They just decimated. They kind of vacuumed up all news into what, you know, into these big aggregation points. And so now there's really just no local news. It's all just been gutted. And so then but they're so focused in, they can't think outside of the box at all. And so the only solution they come up with is, oh, Google themselves are going to start paying local news, newspaper people to like come back. Like giving them grants and stuff like that. Well, no, that's not solving the problem. I mean, like, it's still just this massive central aggregation point for news. And so, and like that whole thing, this complete absence of local media coverage, and all you're left with really, you know, NPR is probably the one who's resisted that the most. Yeah. I know they take the national feed and that kind of thing, but they still do have a local presence.
Not when it matters.
Yeah.
Sam, can we listen to the station online, or is that still a licensing nightmare to have?
No, you can listen to it online. Oh. So you can go to river.radio and you'll play straight out. It's there and live, or you can go to
great domain name, river.radio. Love that.
Thank you.
That's great. That's great.
And yeah, it's on Alexa, Google, Facebook, all sorts of places.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. I like it.
I want to turn it to. I want to ask you about podcasting because we were me and you shared a bunch of emails about just different stuff, and I think it started with Clubhouse, and you got kind of fascinated with Clubhouse for a while. Has that waned at all? Because I think Clubhouse is showing itself to be the disaster that everybody thought it would.
Well, it is because it's not evolving fast enough. It's not doing what it should do, and that I don't know why, given the amount of money that they've, you know, accrued so far from the VCs, but they've allowed the community to start to record stuff themselves, and they've not provided any sort of structure like search directories. It's all sort of organically growing in the background. And yes, I know Twitter did that, and so hashtags came out of, you know, bottom up, and all sorts of other features. And you know, you can see people now putting red dots on Clubhouse rooms because that's their indication that they're going to record stuff against the terms of service originally. But the whole thing about Clubhouse, it's just not evolving fast enough. But the potential was there for doing podcasting really well. In fact, I think their previous incarnation of Clubhouse was a podcasting app called, I think it was something Tech Talk or something like that. And the idea was that you could record, you know, person-to-person interviews. Now, I would love, like, we're doing this show live, and you could be broadcasting this out on a, you know, I'm going to say it now, a Clubhouse room, and you would have an audience below it, and you would have the three of us on stage, and, you know, both of you could ask anyone for questions at the end. But at the same time, you're recording that whole thing, and then you're pushing it out to your podcasting host, and it's on demand at the same time for those who can't listen live. And I quite like the melding of those two platform opportunities where you still do your podcast recording as you would anyway, but you just happen to allow people, if they wish to be live listeners. That's all it is. And I think they need to encourage that.
That's interesting.
Make it successful.
I agree with you on a number of pieces. One, Now we stream, when we record, we stream it live. And mm-hmm. that has been one of the most important factors of our production. We have a chat room, which I call the troll room. And, we have thousands of people sitting in there. And that they can, then they, because it's the troll room, they can do whatever they want. There's no moderation, just yell, scream, shout. Usually it turns, it's pretty useful. So that aspect as a broadcaster, as a producer of programming, I think it's very exciting, energetic when you know you have an audience and you can see them. So I'm not seeing people hand waving. I'm seeing the, and in fact, it's become second nature for me. I just see out of the corner of my eye, I see feedback coming in, 7 seconds delayed to what's going on. But it's very, very good. Our format is not to have someone come up on stage. For me, every integration I've heard of Clubhouse in a podcast sucks donkey balls. It's really horrible. It's unstructured. I'm not interested in what these people have to say. To me, I think Clubhouse revolutionized the conference call. That's great in a corporate environment because you can actually give people permission. You can let them on stage. You can shut them up. I want to hear the hosts. There's maybe one show which I think is Wait, Don't Tell Me, which NPR does, which is in front of a live studio audience, but you hear it's more of the reaction of the audience. You're not getting that with a Clubhouse. And quite frankly, the only interesting podcast stuff I see, or the only podcast stuff I see that's successful, are podcast consultants and experts and people shilling and shelling. And really, it's great for conferences, which is why it's a great conference call app. If you want, I think the future of conferences, instead of going somewhere, may very well be Clubhouse or a hybrid model. But otherwise, I have yet to hear a podcast that integrated Clubhouse that was worth listening to. I'd be happy to be proven wrong or point me to something that works, but I haven't seen it yet.
Well, I did do an experiment. So I took my Rode podcaster mixing desk, connected it to my phone through a TTRS cable. So it was a good quality cable. I had my pod mic. And of course, that meant that Clubhouse couldn't detect that I was actually recording it because it was an off my phone recording. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I got the same high quality that I wanted from my pod mic and absolutely with my mixing desk. So that was quite interesting that I could get a quality, because obviously I don't want to just record straight from my iPhone and push that out as a podcast. So it proves it's all possible. I think what's happened right now is Clubhouse hasn't evolved. Twitter Spaces, of course, has come about right now. And so that in itself, I think, is going to kill Clubhouse, because they haven't got the social graph back channel that Twitter has. And I don't think Clubhouse can develop a Twitter clone quick enough to compete.
Well, see, that brings up the point that bothers me about the whole thing, which I think what we're seeing now, if podcasting 2.0, if it has proven anything, it's that decentralization is a mindset that is creeping more into the mainstream. They just people don't even, the only thing is people just don't understand what to call it. So like the feeling of a need to decentralize is there, even if they don't have the language to describe what that felt need is. And so like there's this article from BBC says why popular YouTubers are building their own sites. And there's a couple of things in here. Like one of them says, this guy says, Google's been very, very good to me, but it's a lot of eggs in one basket. And he's not the only YouTuber looking for alternatives. And so there's these big YouTubers, as they get large enough, they look around and realize that, hey, Google controls not just the audience and the platform and the technology, but they control the purse strings. They control everything about my business. And it's such an odd thing that's so 2020 or 2021 to look around and realize that you've just basically built your entire business on somebody else's business.
Well, we've seen this so many times before. I mean, look, when Twitter had a API, And all these people started building apps on the Twitter API. Twitter then went, actually, we don't want you to have an API anymore. So thanks a lot. Goodbye. And Facebook did the same. So
that's because they wanted to control the experience. And that's what's so beautiful about Podcast Index is here's an API. All you guys who got boned by Twitter or know the experience, go at it. And we've just seen phenomenal interpretations of podcast listening experiences, completely different from your traditional app. I think that's beautiful. And you're so right. That's where Twitter made the mistake. They had the uptake from the developers, you know, who are the infected leprosy class of Silicon Valley. They don't care about them.
The social graph, having access to the social graph and having those algorithms, there is a benefit there. Clearly there is, but I'm beginning to wonder what the benefit actually is, because I know what you're saying, because the benefit is from, you can build recommendation algos, all these kind of things. But I think what we've seen with the Podcast Index is that the algo really needs to live further downstream. It's like the higher up the algo and the social graph exists, the more it's not a matter of messing up the algo and pushing people down a rabbit hole or something like that. The problem is that you can't stop doing that. You can't find the right algo, because the right algo doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. For that thing not to happen, because that's math is not intelligent. And
stop, Dave.
What?
It's so hot when you talk math. Run that Sphinx dry. Talk math to me.
Yeah, baby. The only podcast that gets you hot when you're talking about math.
Dame Jennifer behind my back.
I know. She slipped one in, baby.
Man. Okay, all right. I'm completely lost.
Sorry, I didn't mean to throw you off, but I was waiting for the opportunity. When the word math comes, I'm hitting this.
Now, I guess what I'm trying to say is that when you go, if you push the algorithms down to the furthest to the edge, if you push them to the edge, then you empower, you keep decentralization, and you empower the apps to have control over the content for their hyper local set of users.
Mm.
Yeah. I agree, but I think there's two things I want to throw into the conversation. One is, I firmly believe Apple is going to turn off the directory. Now,
I do too. Whoa.
No, I do too. I 100% agree with you.
That, by the way, would be a huge endorsement for us, and I would appreciate it.
Absolutely. No, I think that's where we're going. And I think you are going to be seen as prescient by delivering the index before it had its need fully. I think it's got a need, but I think it's going to have a real need for all of the app makers. The reason why I say that, it's the same as Twitter and Facebook. Soon as Apple turns on the subscriptions, they are not going to want to allow the directory of podcasts to go to other places where A, they could be either listened to for free, so then the subscription model doesn't work.
Right.
B, they don't want to send the money to someone else to make money. So soon as they turn on subscriptions, I fundamentally reckon they're going to say, you've had your free lunch for 10 years, but hey, guys, time to turn off the directory. Or guess what? You pay your $99 developer cost to be accessing the directory. But I don't think it's going to be a free directory anymore. And I think that's when people are going to look at you guys and say, well, hang on a minute, turn left field, 2 million indexed podcasts, I'm coming to you. That's where I think it's going.
Interesting.
I think you're exactly right. 6 months ago, it was in the back of my mind, and I kept saying, well, I don't think, that's not going to happen. But something has changed my mind over the last maybe month. And I don't know what it is, but I feel like I feel like that's in the cards too. And I'm like you, I don't know what it'll look like, but I think there will be some sort of lag time. And all of a sudden I know what it was. I know exactly what changed my mind on it. We had a guy pop into the Mastodon, and I don't remember who he was. But he came into, there and said that he was looking for an alternative to get episode level data because Apple had that API went down.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it never came back up. And so initially people thought that it was just down, and evidently they just turned it off. And so he was like scrambling, trying to figure out an alternative for that. And that told me, I bet you they're going to flip the switch on that thing before long.
Yeah, it's not going to be long. I fully predicted WWDC. You're going to hear some stuff, maybe at the edges of WWDC, but of the new subscription model. They're going to have to announce it sometime publicly.
Wasn't the, to me, the beta of the podcast app was kind of the giveaway. Zero innovation.
Yes.
I mean, that just, to me, is like, oh, okay, so you guys got something coming, and it's got to be more than this. That's not an Apple announcement. Yeah, okay. Follow instead of subscribe. All right.
Well, I think the index, people need to understand that the Apple lookup API only exists for one. It exists as an accident. It basically exists because all of the Apple podcast app on your phone aggregates feeds directly. It doesn't call back to the mothership. It only calls back to the mothership to get the information.
Right.
It doesn't actually. The Apple Podcast app
is doing a lot of work.
Is aggregating feeds, yes. And so because of that, they needed an open way for the app to call back to home,
right.
To call home. That never existed as a benevolence to app developers.
It was really just for their app to work because you can't have everyone authenticating. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, wow. So they can flip that off anyway.
Yeah, but they weren't supporting web sub either. So
no,
and because they don't do that, they have to have a call out.
Well, I like your prognostication. I would say it would be a huge compliment to the work that's done. I spoke to James Boggs. When was that, Dave? October last year? Something like that?
December, I think. December.
Yeah. And went through it all and... Yeah, it was very clear to me that they were going to do a podcast one or something. You know, they're going to do some kind of Spotify type play, to which he said, what do you think about that? I said, I think it's fucking stupid. To which he promptly never told me anything about it ever again. Right. But I said, no, why would you do that? And he was very interested in the value for value model. He said, can we do that with Apple Pay? I said, no, the whole point is you can't. It's no way because of the fee structure. And I don't think it's in your corporate DNA to try and break that open, and which I don't blame you for. And I hope that I gave him enough that he internally, that they said, you know what, we'll keep our eye on this. And now, you know what, those guys seem pretty solid. We'll turn our shit off. Podcasting is going to be okay. Because overnight, that would be, you know, you talk about your... Devirginization. I mean, that would pop a cherry so big. We'd just been cherry juice would be flowing everywhere because then all of that, and then we can really drive it. You know, people, the hosting companies are still going, well, Apple doesn't support any of this yet, so we'll wait until they support it. And I'm doing a shitty voice, but come on, that's what's held us back for over a decade. So,
yeah, but the minute they turn that off, and they will, I mean, look, Spotify is adding extensions to its API that are not going out to the community, that are not being used by third parties. They're putting stuff in place that is only going to benefit one company. Look, I was Netscape's product marketing manager for ages, right? For the browser.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
So I was in the browser wars. And look, we went through the, you know, ActiveX added by Microsoft and then stuff
and all that. I remember that.
If you remember. Yeah.
Of course.
So, you know, and I like an Apple and Spotify right now to the, you know, the Microsoft ActiveX stuff. They're adding stuff that's only benefiting their platform, not the community. And I think what they'll find is eventually, you know, yeah, they'll get a short-term benefit bonus, but long-term, we all know open succeeds over closed every time. So, let's see.
I got a short story for you, Sam, because your Netscape background. Were you there at the beginning of the company?
I was, yeah.
So in 1990, I want to say 2 or 3, I was running a Gopher server on MTV.com because there was no web. And I got an email from this kid in the university, Champaign-Urbana, Illinois. And he said, Adam, I see what you're doing with MTV.com. Try this shit out. You'll like it. It was from Mark Andreessen. It was the HTTPD, I think, version 1.2 or something. And I'd never seen the Mosaic browser. And from that, and I quit. I left the career maybe 6 months later. I was like, holy shit, look what's going on. So yeah, that was Andreessen. Mark was in his dorm room and I was on the studio floor. And that was, one of the first websites with the HTTP daemon and Mosaic.
Yeah, those were the good days.
Reliving good days, Sam. You're right in the middle of it, man. Now, are you a journalist by profession or just always radio? I mean, what pays the rent for you these days? Setting up a radio station is expensive and takes a while.
It actually doesn't, a while, but it actually isn't expensive these days. I think the running cost for the whole radio station, if I didn't do DAB, would be only £500 a year because you can do cloud-based Icecast servers now.
Yeah.
The initial cost of hardware, there is a, you know, £15,000-£20,000 mm-hmm. cost of hardware to get stuff going. But ongoing maintenance, aside from licenses and DAB, is not very high. And that's why I think it can be democratized. You know, it's getting to that point where the technology now is much simpler than it used to be. I was saying to Dave earlier, you know, I've got two Rodecaster Procaster mixer mm-hmm. desks, mm-hmm. yeah, a couple of high-end laptops, and we use Spotify Pro as our library, and it doesn't matter.
Yes.
And so we're not even having to buy in tracks or anything. We've got 4 million, 5 million tracks, and Spotify's a... Sorry, go on, Adam.
No, I was going to ask you a couple questions, because I like what I'm hearing. One, are you using a playout system? And if so, what? Are we just using Icecast or Sam, or what are you using for that?
No, we're using the Rodecaster mixer and Spotify. We don't have to. Because
no scheduling?
No, because we've decided not to do advertising. We've got sponsors. So we have show sponsors. Literally, we don't have advertising. We chose not to. Chasing 1,000 small micro payments of advertising and then having to fit them into a show and break up the show.
Right.
Seems stupid. So we've got, for example, for the wine show that we do, we've got a local champagne producer called Harrow and Hope, and they sponsor for the whole year. So we get 20,000 from them. Thank you very much, Harrow. And that does one show. And so literally we don't need to go and get advertisers.
So, but I guess what I'm saying is it's a continuous stream that you have a continuous programming mm-hmm. in the middle of the night. Who switches from the next program?
Sorry. Yeah, no, we do have an automation server in the background.
What are you using for that?
We're using a company called Radio King out of France.
Radio King, okay. All right.
And there's a good one as well in Manchester called Radio.co. They're two good ones that you could use. And literally, we've got a library of music up there. So let's say, if the signal falls over, it goes straight back to automation. And when we're not doing 7-7, which is all we're broadcasting now, we put it straight back to automation through the
line. Got it. Okay, then I have another question about the Rodecaster, since we're a podcast show. Now, I think I basically developed the whole concept for the Rodecaster. It was called Podcaster Pro. It was crowdfunded, and it failed spectacularly because I misjudged the engineering. But when I saw the Rodecaster, which I think they've done it better than I could have done it, except for one thing, and I want to understand if I'm, because it's very hard. I've never bought one. I've never been offered one. And the reason I haven't gotten one is because I believe that they still do not have a noise gate on every single channel, on every channel, including
every channel,
TRSS and the USB.
Not on the USB, but they do have it on every other channel. So
I don't think it's on the is it on the TRSS?
In the 2.1 upload, yeah.
Ah, okay. Because my problem has always been I need to be able to noise gate like clean feed. So I would have to run clean feed on a different machine to connect it to the TRSS connector because I can't do it from USB because USB doesn't have a noise gate.
It doesn't have a noise gate. No,
if they would fix that one thing, I would be the biggest proponent of this box because I would use it.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, as a box, I mean, because the previous version would only allow you to do noise gate on the whole system.
Right.
And now you can do individual settings to each of the four mics that you've got.
Oh, yeah. No, they got pretty someone amazing in there who understands it finally. There was a music company doing a podcast broadcast mix, and they had no clue. They got the mix minus right. But it's just that one thing, like, give me that noise gate on every channel.
Yeah, don't do it yet on the USB, I'm sorry to say.
What? Yeah, no, it's too bad. Well, okay, at least I know. So I'll still have to wait. Damn it. It's a sexy box, man. It's a sexy ass box. And the 2.1 upgrade, it looks really good. I could use that. I could replace a lot of my stuff, but not without the noise gate on the USB.
Oh, well, next version, maybe.
Adam. Yeah, we need hot USB talk now. That's what we need. So let's talk about podcasting 2.0. And, you know, Podland was listed. I was streaming value to it weeks ago. I think it might have been maybe James set it up in a Sphinx tribe or something.
He has, yeah.
Because it was, I know it was sending sats. Maybe James was just stealing it all. even though it doesn't exist, Bitcoin's not real.
Now, I wanted to ask you both a question because I've been following the value tag and the value for value very closely, and I love it because for many, many years I've been saying if there was a micropayment system on the internet, and I know when you talked to Tim Berners-Lee, he said that was one of his Mark Andreessen, his book said it was one of his biggest mistakes was not to invent a micropayment system in the browser. But where are you guys positioned on NFTs? What is your thoughts of using the NFTs on an Ethereum Bitcoin platform as opposed to the way that you're using it today with Satoshis on the Bitcoin platform?
I think that, well, with Ethereum, I think Ethereum is, based on what I understand about Ethereum, which is very little, but from what I have seen, it is technologically sketchy in a lot of areas.
I know people. Dave at podcastindex.org.
Yeah, thanks. you be sure and tag it in the subject Ethereum, so I'll know how to handle that. I've heard endless debates between Ethereum and Bitcoin people, and the Ethereum guys seem to have consistent security issues. People get hacked on the Ethereum blockchain a lot, and it makes me nervous. I don't know anything about the low level of Ethereum in order to speak to it, but that's just Ethereum in general makes me nervous about it. It doesn't really give you the any extra capacity, even though layer two like Lightning can work over multiple blockchains. The Ethereum blockchain to me just makes it makes me a little nervous.
Yeah, I'm not so much worried about whether it's Bitcoin or Ethereum. It's the non-fungible tokenization for value for value. So one of the things I'm really interested in is the way that NFTs have been used. So the way I likened it to somebody the other day was very simple. If you've got a public limited company and it issues shares, those shares, if you think of them as NFTs, can be accruing of value up or down like shares do on a stock exchange, and you can trade them. So I could issue from Podland or you could issue from the podcast index an NFT community token that has value. And that value for me was really interesting because yes, it could be for value for how much. So you could take that payment, but also it's very heavily linked to the things I'm really interested in, like behavioral marketing and attention. So when you look for value, for me, that is really attention. How much of that podcast did I pay attention to? And therefore, how much am I going to reward the person for that? And then the second part, though, is as a community token, you can make those tradable between the communities. So you might say, if you listen to 5 podcasts, we'll give you a token, but that token has a value that is tradable outside of Adam and Dave's requirement. I could trade it with other members of the community. So I'm just curious if you would ever look at NFTs. Mm-hmm. That's why.
Yes, I'm very opinionated. Surprise.
No.
So it's the NFTs and value for value streaming payments are two solutions to the different versions of a problem. And the problem is fair pricing of creative work. Mm-hmm. And actually, I'm going to play this 1 minute clip. We played it recently. This is Max Kaiser talking about the business model of Silicon Valley towards creators.
Yeah, it's Adam Curry, the Podfather, is really relaunched. He's the re-Podfather. You know, he's relaunching podcasting 2.0. This is the newest thing. He's totally got some fantastic product up there and running, and you're streaming sets, you know, and I can see on my Twitter feed that the podcasters and everybody are taking to this immediately. It's got traction instantaneously. And, you know, users can stream sats to the creators and start off at the de minimis level of, I think, 5 sats an hour or something like that. And you pick and choose. And this is going to really challenge the current market. The current status of social media is everyone gives all the people in Silicon Valley all of their talent for free and they get nothing.
So that's the model. Now, This, as much as I love Steve Jobs for what he did for podcasting, he did something horrible to the music business and subsequently to the developer business, computer programming developer business. He priced everything at 99 cents a track. For me, I Want to Hold Your Hand by the Beatles is one of the best love songs ever written, and I will pay $99 for it every time. I mean, that's how much I love it. I have no opportunity to do that. So there's a false market. There was no market, a false pricing mechanism, no pricing discovery as to what that is really worth. And the same carried over to apps where they put the same damn 99-cent business model in, of which, by the way, they take 30%, and there's all kinds of other shit that happens, certainly on the music side. So it's actually much less when it really breaks down. And NFTs are, to me, nothing more than a mechanism to find for a pricing discovery mechanism for art. So I consider programming development engineering an art. Yes, it's a science, but it's also an art. Music is an art. Broadcasting is an art, recognized as such in many with many awards. So it's science and an art. And an NFT allows you to value today's Rembrandt. You know, for one, you look at the Rembrandt and it's $60 million. For another, it's like it's not worth the paint on the canvas. You know, you've heard this before. So they're both price discovery mechanisms for valuing creative work. Now, when it comes to broadcasting, I've done this all my life, and it is a very highly discardable product in most cases. It's here today, it's gone tomorrow. Show sucked today, I'll do a better one tomorrow. But it's still valuable to people. And that's the crux of how we look at value for value. And the definition, in fact, of value cannot be determined by anyone else but the person who holds the value. So if I'm listening to a podcast and you've streamed technically ones and zeros in MP3 encoded and compressed format to me, I have now received that value and only I can say how much that's worth to me. It could be just worth the bits it came in on. It could be worth $100 million for an idea I got. So then for me to have the mechanism to return that value, and in our case with value for value in real time with an almost instantaneous exchange, is something that makes sense for finding that right pricing mechanism. So what you said about the community and tokens and everything, absolutely valid, 100%. I think that will come into play. We've already seen many podcasts do this, and you know, it was a great news story for a second. Now it's gone. I believe NFTs, like art, are at this moment in time a huge a money laundering business. You know, that's most rich people buy art and then store it in harbors where it's free. It's a way to store your money somewhere else. So I think there's a lot of money laundering going on. But there's also collectibles are nothing new. You know, this is the this is like, it's just like Beanie Babies, and the markets will ebb and flow and they'll be around for 100 years. The only thing it's done that is extraordinary is it has delivered a pricing mechanism for digital art. I personally feel that the value for value streaming payments are hopefully a somewhat easier on-ramp into God knows what this alien beast, the internet, will create for us next.
Look, Adam, I'm not disagreeing. I just think that there's a interesting model that would sit alongside what you guys are doing. I don't fully understand NFTs, so I'm not going to sit here and say I'm an expert, but the bits I have understood of it, it fundamentally is a digital share in a community that is a transferable, tradable item
absolutely.
That has a value attached to it. And I think there's got to be something in there that is worth sort of sniffing around a bit more on.
Totally.
Yeah, I think there is. The difference, though, I think, comes down to what the difference between an equity and just a like a service or a goods based transaction. Because, you know, if you have something like it's the difference between buying a share of stock or buying a good versus participating in an IPO. You've got this thing. Well, that NFT is more akin to me to like a share of Berkshire Hathaway. You know, because that thing, it's a scarce item, but before too, you know, once it's released,
yeah, but that's not true, Dave. It's not true, Dave, because you can't, by its very nature being non-fungible, you cannot exchange it easily for anything else. Where a share of Berkshire Hathaway, you can do all kinds of stuff with that.
Yeah,
I guess what I mean is like it can be traded. And then before you know it, you have you have this NFT that's, let's just say now it's priced at $85,000 of USD equivalent in Bitcoin. I mean, like, what good does that do anybody? I mean, like, the average person is not going to be able to trade to even get in that game.
Yeah, but what you can do is take a percentage. So let's say you were talking about a Monet. I'll just take that as an example that Adam used. Now, I can never afford to buy a £60 million Monet, but I might be able to afford a 6,000 slither of that Monet, and I might be able to buy an NFT that's on a blockchain that registers that I own X percent of that Monet, and it would allow people who can't afford the whole thing to buy into a segment of that thing. Now, if that thing increases in value, so does my NFT token, and then I could exchange that token and sell it to Adam or Dave. And you can buy it, but you know that the price I'm setting at, it doesn't change the money, the physical art. It changes the token that is a registered it's basically within the blockchain. So it's non-repudiated is what I'm trying to say.
Okay. So this is what makes me uncomfortable about Ethereum. Okay. I got this back in my head again. This sounds uncomfortably like the complexity around DeFi and just the whole, there's like 10 different ways that can crash and burn. There's a simple, the simple, like, you stream me value, I stream value back to you. Mm-hmm. That transaction makes sense. And there's a limited set of scenarios where that can fail. The construct of things like DeFi and NFT open up 100 different pathways of failure, where from fraud, you know, all the way down to technical problems. And it seemed like ignoring for the moment the sort of Beanie Baby-esque, quality of it. And if it's even going to last, the complexity around trading a digital asset and trying to keep track of what that means in real world value sounds so difficult to pull off when there's already an alternative. So that you have the ability to just basically say, here's my address and I'm just going to send you Satoshis. Like, it's just such a simple transaction model that defies, you know, it puts a moat around itself when it comes to failure scenarios.
Yeah. Well, basically, you know, Sam, I'm all for it. I have, you know, it's totally, And I'm also, I really hope Brian of London gets his Hive token adopted. It works, you know, so we're totally open and anyone can put the stuff in there. Implementation, you know, if anyone shows, we're not going to do it. At least I think not. I don't want to ever say never, but I don't see a reason for us to do it. But if anyone wants to do that, that's, I mean, I hope to see people show up with the craziest nutty ideas. It definitely does not have to be Lightning. The concept is so elegant. Dave, congratulations. The whole concept of value block is so elegant, is so simple, is so extensible, is so usable by anything that that will be great. All for it.
You know, we talked about this. We actually pre-recorded a show with Ryan Gentry from Lightning Labs. It'll be next week's show.
Yeah.
And we talked about this a little bit on that show with him. Is there this evolution of open source initiatives? And one of the things we talked about was with I think we're currently in this new phase of open source software where, and I would put us in this model where you see open source companies that are building and putting all of their source and all of their materials out there in the open for other people to have and use and building protocols. And what's so beautiful about that is us in this scenario, we do 1% on anybody that uses us. We're participating and our success or failure is tied to the success of that protocol or that open source thing. But the whole beauty behind it is that if we disappear, if we were to say, you know, okay, we're losing money. We just can't sustain this 5 years from now. The thing we built still functions perfectly and continues to operate even long after we're gone. And so that's the thing with the value block and the namespace and all that stuff. Somebody else can come along and like you're talking about it with they can build an NFT system and they can plug it into the value block. As long as we built it right, you can plug Hive in there. You can plug you can plug anything into that. You can plug fiat into it.
In fact, the promise that we made when Dave and I started this was besides the index protect and preserve free speech was that everybody would be able to participate in the success of the project and the main people were the developers. So there are musicians. There's the drummer and the banjo player and the zither guy and someone's got a fucking theremin and I don't know how does that thing work? What are you plugged into? And we're all jacketed into this one big mixing board. And Dave's exactly right. It's the success of all. And as we've expanded, now we have these two worlds coming together of podcast app developers and Lightning Wallet developers who don't speak each other's language at all. We have not successfully integrated them together as a group. But money speaks, you know, it's the Satoshi that unites us all. So when we're filling up channels, and it's a little bit of a technical thing, but when we've basically plugged up someone's pipes because we're successful and it's working and people are sending streams of Satoshis and we need to work on the routing of this ad hoc kind of second layer network. I mean, I ping Tim at LNPay and say, yo, brother, can you do something here? Can you open up channels, which costs him actual money to do, and he'll get a network routing fee. And if I thank him for that, his answer is not, you're welcome. His answer is, no, man, this is bigger than all of us. And ain't that the truth?
Mm. No, it is building something that's bigger. I get it. It was just curious as to where your head was, because obviously I don't talk to you. I don't have the pleasure of talking to you every time.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I'd ask that question.
By the way, Sam, you can always talk to me. You can always give me a shout. We'll chat with you anytime. You've never asked me, darling. You've never asked me to chat
That's
with you.
That's true. I have never asked you. You're right.
No, you never asked me. So you already, I think I gave my opinion, and I think it's very valid. There's a lot of, in blockchain technology, there's this concept of the Merkle tree. I know it's now I'm going down a damn rabbit hole, which might need another jingle.
Yeah. Adam at curry.com.
But the Merkle tree it is in effect how a blockchain, you can visualize a blockchain, how, you know, it has all these blocks trailing behind it, which is a history. So within a podcasting space, I said it, you can determine by the payment structure, loyalty, who was in early, who brought in other people. There's a lot of different aspects we have not explored yet, which quite frankly, I'm not even knowledgeable enough to speak about. Where my head's at, to answer your question directly, is, okay, we have value flowing. Like on day one, we had $400 worth of value streaming between listeners, podcasters, podcast app developers. Those are the main players that have been receiving value, and that'll be 700 today and maybe 1,000 next week. So there's, and I know this because we typically get 1%. So I can just do a calculation and say, this is what's kind of floating out there. The next piece is to use, these little micropayments as a carrier with a payload so that we can do cross app comments and chat on episodes. Yeah. And sync those to the playback of the podcast. I'm very excited about this. I saw James get excited about what we're doing when he saw statistics. You see, I knew that would happen. So the boys and girls over there,
James.
Oh yeah, no, the boys and girls over there at Satoshi Stream. It's beautiful what's happened there. And this is part of what's so great about an open source project. I didn't tell them to do that. They said, oh, here's an API. Here's how we talk to the guys who can flip stuff around or help us. And they've created something which shows statistics by chapter, how much you made. So this is listener statistics, which, as you know, Sam, coming from a broadcast world, is mind blowing and terrifying at the same time. Because A, we can actually now know when people are listening, and with the boost function, know what people appreciated. We'll also know how many people are actually listening.
Exactly. And that's what the radio world doesn't tell you.
Yeah.
This is the scary part of the equation, which is why I think there's also going to be a lot of resistance. No one really wants to know.
No, they don't. They really don't want to know. They're quite happy to say what it might be based on a small sample. That's what the radio world does.
Now, do you think that if we implemented, if there was an implementation of a streaming player for what you're doing, that your audience would be interested in a wallet that could stream just little bits of Satoshis as value for value when they're listening to your radio station?
Oh, completely. I mean, I think we've got to move to an IP-based radio system delivery where we actually know for advertisers as well as listeners what's going on. Mm-hmm. I mean, the big scam right now in podcasting is in advertising right now. You know, you put your ad into podcast, it gets downloaded from Apple, and half your advertising isn't listened to because you don't know how far the podcast has been actually streamed.
Yeah.
But you're paying for it. And, you know, that's one problem we've got. I think, you know, again, going back to your value for value, that should be for the advertiser a value for value. Tell me how far my, you know, that podcast was streamed, and I'll pay you the advert if it was actually listened to. Not I pay you whether it's listened
and
to
I
or
can,
not.
And I can see hybrids. You know, I've always said that the two are not mutually exclusive. Advertising I find to be extremely valuable in some cases, and in fact, contrary to targeting and all this, you know, programmatic ad buying. I'm very interested in some podcasts advertisements because I know that there will be goods and services related to that podcast, which used to be a dirty word. But, you know, I'm reading Bridal Magazine because I'm buying a wedding gown. So I want the ads. To me,
Adam, is there something we need to talk about?
Yeah, I was not going to interject there. Alfred told me stuff earlier.
Let me tell you, there's this chiffon number I have my eye on. It's dynamite. So, you can see a scenario where, first of all, as a listener or as a podcaster, I would say, listen to the ads. If you don't listen to the ads, that's fine. You don't have to feel bad about skipping the ads. Another part no one talks about because everyone skips ads. That's a fast forward button for a reason. So you don't have to feel bad about it because you're probably going to give me more value than your CPM value just by how much you like the show. But you can also say, hey, stream the value to me. And if you listen to the ads, I'll be able to prove it with now. So a 1 minute ad, let's say it's 10 Satoshis. Wow. Okay. That's, what is that, Dave? Is that a one, like a penny and a half? No, it's a penny. No, it's a 10th of a penny.
No, it's right. It's right about a penny.
It is a penny now. Okay.
Yeah. 10 Satoshis.
And we can go milli Satoshis. Doesn't matter. We can do anything. And then the ad, you could say, listen, if you listen to the ad, the advertiser will give me a 10x bonus. It's kind of like a matching donation.
Oh yeah, the 2x match.
Yeah. So exactly. So the main thing is, I think the statistics are exciting. When Apple first came out with it, it's really only for the Podcaster Connect. Can you see it? And it only works on certain versions of iPhone and above, and the Apple app. So it's very restrictive that way. But now to have this data, my gosh, I finally have enough data to look at No Agenda. And I can see, of course, every show has a slope, right? Has a listening slope that gradually goes down toward the end. The longer the show, the more people drop off, you can see it. It's a regular slope. Mm-hmm. When we hit the donation segment, it's like a little gully. So it goes poop, it drops down 5%. And then that 5% comes back up after the donation segment. Now, at this point, you're down 7% because you're on a gradual slope, but people came back. Now, that's very interesting knowledge to have. So these types of things we can now see, and it doesn't have to break the bank. And in fact, you can work with your audience and say, hey, this is a great tracking mechanism, so I can get better ads at better prices. I mean, it works in so many ways. No rules.
Well, I mean, Kevin Kelly in his book, 1,000 True Fans, he actually prints the last page, a refund for the whole book. But he works out that most people won't get to the last page. So he knows that he's not going to have to pay.
Exactly.
So literally, if you get to the last page, he will tell you exactly how to get a full refund. And one of the examples he gives in that book, he says, look, if TV advertising was, he took the budget of a TV advertising company, which, because they don't know who's watching, and they really don't, it's all a guess. But if you actually had an IP-based digital model where you could say, right, did Adam watch that ad? Yes. Right. Give him a percentage of that budget. Did Dave watch the ad? Yeah. So you are actually paying for people's time and attention, which is the value for value model that you have. And that's really what you've got to do. The model's got to be spun on its head. People have got to be rewarded for their time and attention. And that mechanism for payment, whether it's Satoshis or it's another mechanism, has to exist. And that's the micropayment system that's been missing on the internet.
The only thing I'd change about what you just said is I don't believe people need to be rewarded for their time. I believe people need to value time. Okay. And so I see it exactly almost opposite. Everything the same, just that one nuance that the person who is receiving value from the creator has to determine the value of that they want to return. And whether
that's why the boost button is so important,
because it's so beautiful.
Otherwise it's purely just a time play, and you can set your time preference high, but your time preference changes sometimes. I mean, like if I'm listening to Podland and I know that I've got to go do something else. And I know instinctively I'm not going to be able to return to the show. So I'm really like halfway through it. But I've already gotten something out of it.
You hit two boosts and say, bye. Thanks for the memory. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Cause I'm like, okay, well, I just hit the boost button a few times and then I bail.
Boost and bail, baby. Boost and bail.
Yeah. It's not just a time play. Cause that's an inaccurate and it lets me make that determination. Sometimes I'll just sit there and let the thing play just cause I'll let it play out. But that's something, that subjective value, that I have to make that decision. That's not something that can be sort of pre-rendered in advance.
Right.
Speaking of value, we probably need to thank some people.
We do need to thank some people. If you can hold on for a bit, it's there, Sam, and bear with us. As a value for value proposition, these These donations support the entire project. After our initial couple of weeks, we've been running purely on donations. Now, neither Dave or I get paid, or Eric, but that's okay. Having the time of my life, and we've built a whole nother revenue stream for our podcast work. And we're extremely excited about doing all this. So the value for value is, what are you getting out of this project? We have podcastindex.org, which by itself is worth considering to support, especially in light of Sam's Nostradamus-like prognostication that soon it will be the only go-to index. Well, the only one up and running. Anybody can recreate and get an index going, which is part of the beauty of the open source. This show itself, although you can also support this by getting any one of the four value for value apps, Podfriend, Breeze, Sphinx chat app, or PodStation browser extension. You can find all these under newpodcastapps.com. So we still like the cuck bucks while we're bootstrapping everything. And you can do that by going to podcastindex.org. Scroll on the bottom. You got the big red donate button, and that'll do a PayPal for you. Also thrown into the mix, while stocks last, we've got podcastindex.social. We've got our GitHub. I mean, we've got a Telegram channel now. Woo!
No, I'm going crazy. I'm losing my mind with all
the
these
Telegram. There's a whole world there. All the cool kids are on Telegram. Who knew?
Yeah, you screwed me over because I downloaded Telegram, and then all this. I didn't realize this, but I had like five people. Evidently, it's one of those, you know, apps that wants to hook into your phone number and give you your social graph and all this kind of jazz. Well, I got like five people popped up. It's like, hey, cool, you're on Telegram. And now I'm it's just dinging away on my
Yeah, you got to mute everything right away. Oh. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. So, Dave, who do we thank? Who sent us some value today for the to discuss here in the board meeting?
First up, we got Christopher Isine, $33.33.
Christopher
is the
he is Mr. 2 million.
He is the Swedish trickler. He is Christopher Isine, the Swedish trickler.
The Swedish trickler.
He's trickling podcasts in on a small rate every few minutes.
His entire mission is, I want to collect every single feed that's out there that's valid, that's good. He has collections, and he is the National Archive, and he just keeps working with us, with you in particular, to dedupe, make sure we get all the everything in there. It's fantastic.
His brain is basically just a huge OPML file, is what it is.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Chris. Yeah, Chris, thank you. Really appreciate that. He's building some kind of project that he explained to me once, and we have to get another explanation from him. Because he's got some crazy idea he wants to do.
Let's see. We got Ray Fleischman gave us $25. I could not find a note from Ray, so thank you, Ray. Ray.
The name sounds familiar, though. Thank you, Ray. Appreciate it.
Let's see what we got here. Okay. This is a $25 donation, and it says, hi, guys. Just call me. Okay. Just call me Ville, Villa.
Ville.
All right.
Yeah.
This is the promised raise for Dave. If you can pronounce my name correctly without cheating, I'll send you another one.
Wait, Ville. Okay. It's Ville.
Ville, yeah.
Yeah, Sam, you go on vacation and you on holiday in France. It's got to be Ville, right? Ville?
Yeah, Ville.
Ville. Oh, Sam, did I hear a little French accent?
A little bit of a French accent.
Parlez-vous un petit peu de français?
Ah, oui.
Qu'est-ce que quitte là? Papa fume une pipe. Hey, maman pipe papa. Yeah.
So I'd say it's like Baskerville.
Yeah, Baskerville, exactly. Ville. Okay, good. We nailed it. So you got another raise coming, Dave.
Okay, I just want to say that you got you two, and then the dude from Alabama trying to pronounce everything. That just does not sound like. I don't think I have the correct role
I think it's Veal, y'all.
Veal.
Veal. Veal.
All right.
Ask Meemaw. Meemaw will know.
Meemaw.
Meemaw.
Thank, thank, Thank you.
Yes, ville. Merci beaucoup.
Ville. Okay. Yeah, I have the wrong job on the show. Adam Portress gave us $10.
Ah.
And Adam says, hello, gentlemen. Adam Portress here from SC, I guess South Carolina. Mm-hmm. As just a lowly podcaster, hero movie podcast, among many others, is someone who knows next to nothing about all of this, and I feel I must support and say thanks to Dave for the help. So here's a little value for value. Oh, I helped him get his feed on the value block.
Oh, beautiful. What's the name of the podcast? What's the name of his podcast?
Hero Movie Podcast.
Hero Movie. Okay. Check it out. Yeah. I'll send you some stats, bro.
I have no idea what I'm doing, but I'm about to build a Raspberry Pi and make my own node.
Nice. You are in for a ride.
Yeah. There's been a few people on the Mastodon that have done that. They're like, man, I just ordered a Raspberry Pi. I got no idea what I'm doing. I'm like, okay.
I have been doing tech support for Sir Gene for a week now. And I say, hey, man, why don't you just get some Voltage? No. So he's got Dockers and C-Lightning. Oh, I'm like, oh, man, you want any? What, I'm going to troubleshoot this in text for you? No. Very nice, though. You know what? That's the way to learn, man. That's how I learned. You're in for an education.
Gene is I'm being interviewed on Gene's show next week.
Yeah, Sir Gene Speaks is something that must be listened to. He's interviewing everybody. Yeah. Well, it must be listened to regardless, but he's interviewing all of the developers, everybody can get his hands on. And I really appreciate that. He's really pushing podcasting 2.0 in all of its glory, not just the SATS story, but, you know, all of the namespace stuff that's in there.
He's a good podcaster, too.
He's a great podcast. You know, I coached him on that, too. He was like, doing one time 1.2 speed in recording and chopping out all the silences. I said, Dude, no. So that's all right. We cleaned him up. We took him to the Adam Curry Podcaster Clinic. He's safe now.
Adam says, I'll take some R2-D2 karma for good luck if you got it.
Oh, crap.
Keep this is fighting how... the, see, keep fighting a good fight, boys. Adam Portress, cue paper crumple.
Yeah, and karma.
You've got... karma.
The show's bleeding over.
Yeah, it's
bleeding over.
Your paper crumple, Mr. Porter.
There you go. Wow. Good crumple. Woo! Crumple-esque.
Right. We got this. Ryan Hayes emailed about, that's all of our donations. But when I got a note to read, though, here says, okay. He says, hi, Adam and Dave, love the podcast. I'm the creator of an open source Flutter library called Just Audio, which has helped app developers create cross-platform podcast apps for iOS, Android, and the web and others.
Right.
He says, unfortunately, I'm stretched to the limit handling feature requests. He says, I was hoping you might be able to give a shout out to the project and hopefully entice some of your listeners, specifically those who are developers of podcast apps, to join in the effort to build a powerful open source audio library that will hopefully allow more app developers to bring their podcast app ideas to life.
Nice.
Interested developers can find the project on GitHub.
What's it called?
It's called Just Audio. It's a Flutter library. But he says thanks for the work on the namespace and the index. But he did a PS. He says, a couple of shows ago, Adam mentioned the Flutter guys, quote, the Flutter guys always wind up doing the iOS part last. I'm sure there's a reason for it, unquote. And he says, although each app developer may have their own reasons for not releasing a platform when they theoretically could, I can say that the Flutter podcast apps are also ultimately limited by the features and platforms supported by the underlying audio library. And that is why I'm hoping to attract more contributors to fill in that missing support. He says, the difference in the iOS is the iOS audio APIs are actually more complex than the Android ones.
Yeah.
And it takes more than a couple of lines. A couple of lines to achieve an Android may in some cases take 20 or more lines in iOS. So he's just saying that it's a lot. The audio support's not there.
Right. And so I put you on, I put a link to the GitHub in the show notes. And just so you know, they're a Flutter favorite. Says it right there. They got a badge, Flutter favorite.
Oh, we need a podcast index favorite badge.
We need a Fluffer favorite. I've been advocating for that. I can't get it. Well, thank you all for the value you gave us. That is really appreciated. It does keep stuff running. You should
defragment that whole group of people.
You've been defragmented. You guys are good and defragmented. Beautiful. Podcastindex.org if you want to support us. Sam.
Hello.
Yes, you're a welcome member of the board here today. Outside of the NFT thinking, which I appreciate, and having heard you said that, I certainly will keep my eyes and ears open for anything that I see that might be appropriate. What else can we do for your shows, for poor children in Africa? I mean, what can we do that would make you happy? Is there anything within our power?
Yeah, one thing. I've spoken to Dave, and I'd love to come back on the show and talk about it at another time. I still think in the area of discoverability, there is something, Dave, around trackbacks and pingbacks that we can take from the original RSS feed and use for elements within the player. So I would love, as a listener of a podcast, be able to put a comment or but physically, of course, that used to be in a blog, a pingback or a trackback. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'd love to be able to do something audibly so that in the middle of me listening, I can say, oh, at minute 23, there was something really interesting that was said by Adam and Dave, and then be able to tweet that out or push that out as some mechanism so that then the person gets that unique URL identifier within the RSS so that it says, yep, podcast X, minute Y. Yep, that's the point I'm going back to exactly within it. So it's not like chapters, it's beyond chapters. It's literally like segments within side of chapters even. Mm-hmm. And that will, I think, help with discoverability.
Hold on a second. Just on the heels, man, on the cusp of the show, we are going to do it, everybody. Hey,
and now it's time for some hot.
That's right. Because we got sound clips, sound bites. We got recommendations. Take it away, Dave.
Well, we reopened the namespace work today, or excuse me, yesterday with phase 3. So I had to clean up the repo and get all that stuff going and just kind of get everything put back together so that we can start back work. And what we're looking at for phase 3 is trailers, just right off the bat, trailers, license, where you can attach like a, you know, if you wanted to make your whole show, let's just say Creative Commons so people could share it and reuse it. You could tag it with a license. We're going to look at adding location data to the chapters. And then this may be
doesn't this fit in already with sound bites and with recommendations? I mean, what I just heard Sam ask for is sound bites. It's literally sound bites.
Recommendations is the last, is the other one that we're going to try to get out. And that's, have you read that? Have you seen that proposal, Sam?
Yes, I have, yeah.
What do you think?
Yes, I have.
What do you think?
Yeah.
Could that be incorporated into what you're saying?
Yeah, well, it is a recommendation. It's a recommendation to a point within the podcast, isn't it? So it's telling me where I should start. Because look, so many podcasts have so many things in it. We chapterize everything on Podland, and that's great, but it only takes you to a start of a thing. But I want, so the way that we try and promote our podcast is I take a 2-minute snippet from the audio and I put that into a headliner and I put it out as social media as a teaser trailer. But that's not really what I want. I want to be able to have the users choose, not me as the creator choose what I think's the best part. I want the user to say, this is the bit I recommend, and take that out and share it with their community. And then that drags more people in, because I don't know what everybody who's listening found most interesting.
Yeah,
So the recommendation XML chunk,
it's a little different.
Is different, but I wonder if it can go both ways.
But isn't this also kind of the way I run chapters with the external file, which is unique to chapters actually because they're outside of the RSS feed, and you know what this comes from Hypercatcher. Where you're listening, this is, and have you tried that? If you haven't tried the Hypercatcher app, it's worth a go, Sam.
Okay.
Because you're listening, and this is how I came up with the idea, actually. You're listening and like, oh crap, this is a great moment. I'd like to tweet that out. I'd like to do something. Mm-hmm. In Hypercatcher's case, you tap it. It says, okay, you can put in a tag and you know, like a title and a URL. That goes into a back end, a moderation interface. So you can approve them because obviously there's some things you just may not want to have show up that people tag or what they say. And so that's the idea of community-based chapters, which update mm-hmm. throughout the life cycle of the episode. Is that something that that would work in that manner, that you could, you can basically tag? Well, you should be able to, I guess you'd be able to take that,
Well, see, gotta think about it. SoundCloud used to have something similar they did in their, player.
Yeah.
And what it was great was that you could look at a whole SoundCloud audio playback and see actually the interesting parts that people have tagged.
Right.
And jump to them.
Which is,
I just think there's...
Oh, go ahead.
No, I just think there's something in that whole thing. And look, I don't
how about
have
this?
The
How about this?
Go on.
So when you get Podland, it technically would not matter what app you're looking at. And you will see that timeline you're talking about. And it will show every single... This will be just like YouTube Super Chat. Every single time someone hit the boost button, they could add... So they can boost and they can add a message. Like, oh, this is a great joke, great segment, whatever it is. And then you and everyone else can go back on that timeline and see all those boosts and the comments that each user put in, and it would work across all apps.
Yeah.
That's what you want, right?
Yeah.
Okay. You have two more wishes. What else can we do for you? You rubbed the lamp, Sam. You rubbed it, so you've got to take the genie wishes.
Okay. My other wish then is to take you for a beer when you're next in the UK.
Oh, brother, I would love that. And likewise, if you ever find yourself in Austin, I miss my friends in the UK. I miss my daughter too. She's, you know, just across the pond. You got it. I would love that. I would love that. I'll even come to your local, man.
Absolutely. Excellent.
Yeah. I know how to find Berkshire. Follow the money.
And that's it for me, guys.
Follow the money to Berkshire.
Yeah, follow the money.
I really appreciate you taking your Friday evening, Sam. I know it's you've got what? So you're now you missed dinner. Someone's pissed at you.
Yep.
Yeah. So really appreciate that, Dave. Anything else for you for the before we close this board meeting?
Yeah, I got something. I want something for Sam. Sam, is your IceCast for your radio? Is your IceCast URL, is that public?
I will send it to you happily.
Okay, because I want to. We've got some guys like Alex Gates on the Mastodon. He's very heavily working on trying to get a live tag to try to build that protocol. And I would love to use that stream as a test.
No worries. I will send it to you after this conversation.
Beautiful.
Perfect. Okay.
Beautiful. Awesome. Gentlemen, thank you very much. This has been a great board meeting. Dave, I'm off next week. I haven't had a vacay and I haven't not done shows for 15 months. So, and I am still a newlywed technically. So my beautiful bride and I are going to go away. We do have a great pre-recorded interview we did with Ryan Gentry, who's I asked him for his title, but he's the business development guy at Lightning Labs, but he's also one of the driving forces in the entire industry, and he's a super great connector and a very fun guy and an Austinite to boot. So we have a pre-recorded show with him. I think you'll enjoy that because we had a good time for sure. And that does it for Podcasting 2.0 for episode 31. We'll be back, and we hope you join us for the board meeting. Till then, bye-bye, everybody.
You have been listening to Podcasting 2.0. Visit podcastindex.org for more information.
Go podcasting!